cricket, lovely cricket, cricket lick the bat. Welcome along, everyone. It's the cricket. Yes, back again. It's Thursday. It's 6 o'clock. It's 9:10 about. Phoenix FM's a weekly cricket show with all the best in guests, chat, news, usual features, and a bit of music. Tonight, providing we're not chatting too much, I'll play you songs from Faithless and Propaganda. As always, you are listening to Phoenix 98 on the FM dial in the Central Essex area. You can listen to us via the website phoenixfm.com. Click on Listen Live. And of course, shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. Plenty to talk about tonight with the World Cup. Of course, we'll talk about England. We'll be getting the views of some of the press people and media experts. And joining me in the studio tonight, live and direct, is the grumbler himself, Mr. Richard Clark. Richard, how are you doing?
All right, really. I've got a stinking cold, I'll be honest, and the M25 is not my friend. Apart from that, I'm fine, Darren. How are you?
Well, it's great to have you here, my friend. And Richard and I will be examining everything all the way through the show. So get in out the cold and the wet. Shake off your wellies, pour yourself a nice hot cup of tea, and settle down to 98 Not Out. I should add as well, a very good evening to Dan Hagger. I know he's tuned in and listening, and I'm sure, Dan, you are putting on a bit of the Old Spice, a bit of product in the hair. Because he will be at the Essex Members Supper this evening at the Essex County Ground. And the bad news is Richard and I are heading there directly after the show. If anyone else is going there, drop us a line, say hi. And make sure you come and make yourselves known at the County Ground later on this evening. And of course, many ways to get in touch. Email radio@phoenixfm.com, title your mail 98 Not Out. Use social messenger. Yes, we're across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, because we're too old for TikTok or Snapchat or whatever other ones there are. And if you know me or Richard personally, text us and email. WhatsApp. Although WhatsApp is a bit of a dodgy ground these days, if you've been watching the news. Anyway, you are welcome, most welcome along. It's glad to have you here for the next hour. So sit tight and relax, and hope you enjoy what we've got for you this evening. As always, we'll start off with cricket birthdays of the week. And first up, Matty Hayden, a very destructive Aussie opening bat. He's 52. I think he's doing punditry at the World Cup as well. Michael Vaughan, 49 years old. Greg Blewett, 52. That legendary West Indian fast bowler, Courtney Walsh, is 61. Dimi Mascarenhas, once of Essex Parish, 46. Shane Dowridge, another West Indian, 32. VVS Laxman, 49. Odeen Smith, 27. Mitchell Johnson, he bowls to the left, he bowls to the right, 42 years old. Excellent women's cricketer Elise Perry, 33. Another woman cricketer, Sushma Verma, is 31. Legendary Australian wicketkeeper Rodney Marsh, 76. And listener Sam King is 31 today. Remember, if you or someone you know has a birthday coming up, then make sure you get in touch by the usual ways. I just read them out. If you weren't listening, what were you doing? And let us know if you want to be added to the birthday list. And I've just remembered and realised, after Richard pulling faces at me across the desk, that Rod Marsh is no longer with us. He went, was it last year?
Yeah, March time, I think it was.
Yeah, it was about the same time as...
Was it the same day as Shane Warne?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? At the time, we had Bumble on the programme to remember, give us some memories of those two players. God, two of the biggest names of Australian cricket in the sort of modern era, really.
Yeah, I remember Rodney Marsh stands out because I did a piece on Derek Randall's famous innings against the Aussies when he was bowled over and doffing his cap, etc., etc. And I think it was that innings. It was certainly in that series.
Was that here or down there?
I think it was down there.
Yeah, it was Perth, I think.
It was, yeah. But what stood out was, I think it was either that innings or in that series, because he got a couple of big knocks in that series. And he was out. Derek Randall was out. And he was given, and Rod Marsh basically called him back and got him reinstated, which kind of runs against the feeling that we had around that Lily Thompson, Chappell, Australian side, particularly in the Ashes. And if I looked at it on YouTube, and it was very much down to Rod Marsh that happened, and I was incredibly impressed by that. I looked that up after he passed away.
Yeah, you're right, because that was... There's an excellent film, Fire in Babylon, which explains, and it's a really good documentary of that fantastic era of West Indian cricket. And they trace it back to West Indies touring Australia in 1975. And the abuse and the hard cricket that was played by Lily Thompson, Chappell et al. And that fired up Clive Lloyd to fight fire with fire. And that was where the whole brand of, you know, the fast bowling battery and all the rest of it all came from. If you've not seen Fire in Babylon, you can watch it. I think you can watch it on Amazon if you've got the Amazon app, and it's probably on YouTube. You can watch it for free these days. Very, very well worth a watch, and probably if you're younger and you don't really recognise just how important. I mean, West Indies these days are a bit of a sorry story, but there was a time when they were just so dominant, and I think they went on a run of the longest run of unbeaten in test matches, which was for a very, very long time, with the likes of Holding, Garner, Walsh, Marshall, Lloyd, Greenidge, Haynes, Richards. I could go on, really, couldn't I, with those names?
They were an incredible side, and from a sort of sociological, social history perspective, you look at what was happening in English football at that period of time, the sort of 70s and 80s, and you had this concept of stacking in football, and there was and that concept is where you put players in certain positions because of the way you perceive them. And in England, you didn't have a centre back who was black, you didn't have a centre midfield, so many, you didn't have a goalkeeper who was black. Generally, you put those players on the wings. That was the sort of stacking theory, because there was this concept in the 70s, which was obviously highly racist, in terms of the skillful players, but not strong-willed.
Yeah.
Not strong-willed mentally, not strong-willed in terms of that winning capability. And the point was that Clive Lloyd and that side were so strong. They were so strong mentally. You know, if Greenidge and Haynes didn't get the runs, in came Richards. He got the runs most of the time. If they all failed, Clive Lloyd would pull one out. Always. You know, and then comes Derek Murray or whatever, whoever the keeper was at the time. And then they had the four quicks. And remember that there was, a part of the demise of that side was based around the fact that the over rates were so slow, supposedly, that they wanted to speed up play. Well, also, a lot of sides were being absolutely battered by that team and couldn't cope.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Well, let's talk about the World Cup. India were playing Sri Lanka today in Mumbai. Quite a game. India posted their highest total on home soil in a World Cup match, and they would feel that they could have got even more, especially when Kohli and Shubman Gill were at the crease. For Sri Lanka, Madushankar took 5 for 80, an incredible spell of bowling, getting the scalps of Rohit, Gill, Kohli, Suraya Kumar and Shreyas. However, 5 for 80 is the most expensive fifer in World Cup history. What will make that even more painful is the fact that Sri Lanka will rue Gill being dropped on 8 and Kohli being dropped on 10. But all irrelevant, really, in the end. When it was Sri Lanka's turn to bat, up stepped Shami, who was not to be outdone. He took 5 for 18 off just 5 overs in reply, as Sri Lanka crumbled to a miserable 55 all out, which could have been a lot worse, given that they were 14 for 6 at one stage. I think 22 for 7. It was awful. So India win by 302 runs. And go top of the table. They remain unbeaten, and they're through to the semi-finals. For them, next up, a big game, actually, because South Africa will fancy their chances of getting to the semis. They meet at Eden Gardens on Sunday.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Now, I suppose we've got to talk about England. Before we get into what happened, and Richard and I will give our musings on it, over the weekend, and this was before the India game, I managed to catch up with a few of our friends from around the cricketing world, and we got their thoughts. England are all but out of the 2023 Cricket World Cup following an 8-wicket defeat at the hands of Sri Lanka. This follows a drubbing by South Africa last weekend and even an earlier defeat to Afghanistan. The cricketing world is in uproar, maybe even shock. But should they be shocked? I spoke to a few of our friends from around the cricketing world to get their thoughts. First up, here's Paul Newman from the Daily Mail.
Well, where can we possibly start? I don't think anybody expected England to really win this World Cup in Indian conditions. Maybe have a go, but India were always the firm favourites. But nobody expected it to be as bad as this. Everybody, I think, without exception, expected England to make the last four of this World Cup. After all, they've been such a white ball force, haven't they, since the nadir of 2015. But yet they've been utterly, utterly terrible. Their decline is quite staggering, really, from where they have been. Double World Cup winners in both 50 and 20 over cricket to this, and this sorry defeat by Sri Lanka, which leaves them all but out of the World Cup at such an early stage. Inevitably, there will be a tension on Jos Buttler and Matthew Mott, the captain and the coach, who we should remember lifted a World Cup together, a 2020 World Cup in Melbourne, less than a year ago. But there's just been muddled thinking throughout this World Cup in selection, in the toss. There was muddled thinking at the start when they announced the World Cup squad and told the players they were definitely going, and then pulled out Jason Roy to put in Harry Brook, who was a notable omission. Everything really has been muddled since then. We can look at the structure, we can look at the lack of 50 over cricket, we can blame the 100, we can blame all these sorts of things, but these remain extremely talented players. But they have looked nothing like the England side that we know of in this World Cup. And this really presents the first crisis since Rob Key took over as managing director of England cricket. He's done a magnificent job before now, but now he's got a lot of thinking to do. I think Mott and Buttler have got enough credit in the bank as coach and captain to lead the side in their defence of the 2020 World Cup in the Caribbean and the USA this June. But after that, really, unless that goes extremely well, we're going to have to look at the whole thing, a new cycle for one-day cricket. And really, a new direction. There's a lot of good players. That England had a very old side in this tournament. Jos Buttler admitted that before the tournament, but also said, look, this is not our last dance. There's still life in us yet. Well, sadly, that's not proved to be the case in this World Cup. And really, we're in as bad a position as we were in 2015. And I never thought I would say that. All they've got to play for now is pride. All they've got to play for is to try and ruin India's party in Lucknow on Sunday. But at the moment, they look a long, long way from the side we've all become accustomed to, and the side which have thrilled us with their white ball cricket over the last 8 years.
That's Paul Newman, chief cricket writer for the Daily Mail. Now let's hear from Charles Dagnall, who's fronting the coverage of the Cricket World Cup for Channel 5.
Well, of course, it's not gone the way that everybody expected. Me, myself, I had England down for a semi-final spot right from the off. Obviously, adjusted those thoughts now. But look, there's a lot of people out there who are willing to sort of come crashing down on England for the performances that... And in some aspects, they're kind of right. But I'd like to look at a little bit more of an overview and a philosophical view of it, is that they, over the last 8 years since Owen Morgan took over in 2015, they have completely changed the nature of one-day cricket. And this side looks like it's a little bit, it's come to the end of its cycle, I think. They're an older side. It seems like everybody else has caught up a little bit. And I don't think I've seen an England side so badly out of form for quite some time. I think we've also got to appreciate what they've given us in this past sort of 6 or 7 years, where, you know, from 2015 World Cup, they completely reinvented themselves and the style and the brand of cricket that they had under Owen Morgan, with a youngish team that played fearless kind of one-day international cricket. And that, in turn, brought them a World Cup in 2019. They've also just won the World T20. So, come on, let's take a bit of stock here, in that we've had a huge amount of success over the last 6 or 7 years. Sometimes, hey, hate to say it, sometimes you don't win cricket games. It can happen. And when one thing goes wrong, then another thing, and then another thing, and it's difficult, a bit like quicksand. It's very difficult to get yourself out of it. Look, there's plenty of people, plenty of writers out there who want to blame this and blame that, and who's to blame, what's to blame. Is it it's the format? Just shush. The format or playing the 100 or anything has got very little to do with this, in my opinion, because you look at how much domestic 50-over cricket is played by India, or the players of India, the players of Australia, the players of New Zealand, and they don't play any anyway. You know, I'm sure you can find examples of some who do, but predominantly they play very little 50-over cricket, and they're going all right. So perhaps it was the sort of state of flux that England were in, you know, the late decision with Jason Roy with those back problems. And then should Harry Brook be in the side, in the squad? How can we you know, wedge him in there? So there was a little bit of a flux in that. Stokes and his injury, you know, was he available, or, you know, was he available for the Afghanistan match? But, you know, when you bring him in, you've got to change the nature of your side because he's not bowling at the moment. Three changes for the previous game against South Africa, then three changes again. That's very unusual for an England side. So, look, there seems to be a few decisions, a little bit of, some odd decision-making out in the middle and stuff. But I think we've got to, just take a breath a little bit and just sort of say, well, you know, perhaps this is the end of this particular cycle. Let's reevaluate, let's restock, and see how they go. Remember, they're still World T20 champions at the moment. The amount of 50-over cricket played domestically has very little to do with it, to be perfectly honest. You know, in those particular scenarios, if England are 3 or 4 down, we sort of go back to county championship cricket or test match cricket. That's the sort of mindset you get yourself in, and plenty of those players play both of those forms. So, you know, I it happens. It's not great. Of course you want to see England competing a lot better than they have done. I also wonder about the preparation as well. I know a lot of them, if not all of them, have played in the subcontinent, but it's going from English conditions and having very little preparation in the subcontinent, I don't think necessarily helped them either. You do need a period of adaptation, but that's the way the international calendar is, so you can't really use that as an excuse. You got to try and crack on as best you can. So obviously disappointing, not the way that England would, but just take a breath, everybody. Stop climbing all over them. They've given us a lot of success over the past 6 or 7 years. Give them an opportunity, perhaps, to reevaluate, restock, and sort of build a new team for future tournaments. I don't think necessarily the decision to announce the central contracts over the last couple of years was particularly great in the middle of a World Cup, but again, that's not necessarily a reason to perform badly on the field. So we'll see what happens, and control, alt, delete, and reset.
I think two things have come out of this World Cup for me. One, sorry, you won't convince me otherwise, if you spend the whole of August playing a completely different competition that nobody else in the world plays, and you've played fewer one-dayers, is it any great surprise that suddenly you can't defend a competition that you won so brilliantly 4 years ago? But just as important, and in parallel to England's travails, the way this World Cup is going, with the schedule changed at the last minute, all the horror stories of fans, how hard they found it to get into grounds and locate their tickets, having their sun cream confiscated, having their water confiscated. Do the authorities, the BCCI, the ICC, do the authorities really actually want a 50-over competition? Or are they going to look at this and go, oh, look, we can strangle this because actually we can have a T20 competition instead, more T20, which makes more money and is easier to arrange? You just look at it and you go, actually, how much do the authorities want a 50-over competition? How far are they actually going out of their way to organise a 50-over competition? So for me, England's problems, there's one format too many. I think that's blindingly obvious. There's a massive issue now with the Blast and the 100, not helped by Joe Root's comments, I don't think. And how much do the authorities actually want 50-over cricket? How much are they going out of their way to provide and facilitate and organise 50-over cricket?
That's Mark Pugach, who is currently fronting the coverage of the Rugby World Cup on ITV. That seems to be showing cricket how a proper World Cup should be run.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
And finally, let's hear from another Mark, this time Mark Butcher.
Well, it has been massively disappointing. I think leading into it, everybody thought that England would at least make the semi-finals. Still an enormous amount of talent in that squad, albeit that they are all, you know, most of the senior players are the wrong side of 30, and none of whom, including the captain, you would imagine, would make it through to the next World Cup. You know, what constitutes the sort of collapse in form and confidence is something that's very difficult to put your finger on, albeit that England's sort of preparation for the tournament did not include a massive amount of very intense 50-over cricket. The format seems to be a little bit of an inconvenience for a lot of players, but over the course of the summer, not least the fact that you know, the ECB didn't have an enormous amount of 50-over cricket scheduled either, so none of those things help particularly. And tactically, we've been found wanting as well. You know, in the huge game, the big, big game against South Africa, against a team who are very, very dangerous with the bat, in conditions that, you know, in the old days, you would never even have dreamed about bowling first in conditions such as those in Mumbai on that particular day, not least against a team that are pretty flaky when it comes to chasing, as we are too. And so, you know, even at that moment where you thought, well, okay, this is where all the big beasts wake up, even at that moment they were found wanting. I suppose the only thing, and I don't know whether to be happy or sad about this, is that it's not over yet. England still unbelievably have the chance of qualifying if they beat India on Sunday. And then hopefully, well, you know, thankfully, if that doesn't go well, then that'll be the end of it, and everybody will be put out of their misery. As for what happens in the future, I'm not entirely sure. You know, like I said, most of the England team that are involved at the moment will not be involved in the World Cup. The next 50-over World Cup in 4 years' time in South Africa. England have already decided that they're going to be taking a very much a fresh squad down to the West Indies for those three ODIs in December. And the cycle will begin again. That is when the question around the lack of 50-over cricket that, you know, the up-and-coming players, the Will Jackses, the Ollie Popes, Zach Crawleys, etc. have played, that is where you'll start to really notice the bite in, you know, that lack of 50-over cricket that is played at domestic level. The 100 has not been the reason for England's shocking performance so far in the World Cup, but it might well be the reason for average performances in the years to come. We'll have to wait and see.
Many thanks to all my guests today, Paul Newman, Charles Dagnall, Mark Pugac, and of course, Mark Butcher.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
What do you think? Get in touch, let us know. Email radio@phoenixfm.com. Type in my 98 out, 98 not out. Social messenger, social media, I can't speak. I'll take a break. Here comes Propaganda. This is Jewel.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
And that was Propaganda and Jewel from, I think, 1987? Something like that? Or was it earlier? Or later? Earlier, was it?
Strikes me as earlier, but I'm not sure about that. I only just remember the song, I have to say.
You know, I heard that.
Not because of age, not because I'm too old, but because my memory is bad. So.
You're listening to Phoenix FM on 98 on the FM dial by the internet, phoenixfm.com, or shout at your smart speaker. And this is 98, not out on the weekly cricket show, every Thursday between 6 and 7 with me, Darren Moto. And with me in the studio today is my special guest, Richard Clark, a.k.a. The Grumbler. And we are talking the World Cup. Now, before the break, or before the music, you heard the thoughts of various people from around the media circuit about England's performance. Now, that was recorded on Saturday morning last week after England had got thumped by Sri Lanka. There was a kind of a hope that if England could beat India on Sunday, that maybe all was not lost. But unfortunately, England's miserable World Cup campaign slumped further as they collapsed to a 100-run defeat by the hosts in Lucknow. Now, with England, whether it's football or especially cricket, sometimes rugby, it's the hope that gets you. England bowled out India for 230. Kohli, their talismanic player, was out for a duck. 200 230 on a tricky pitch. But England, the defending champions, you would have thought that 230 was easily gettable. But no, we were bowled out for 129 amid raucous home support in the latest batting capitulation. It's their fourth defeat in succession in India and their fifth overall, the first time that they have lost five matches at a Cricket World Cup. All 10 wickets went for just 99 runs. The results send the unbeaten host back to the top of the table. As I said earlier on, they are confirmed as through to the semi-final, meeting South Africa on Sunday. England are meanwhile bottom, and while they're not mathematically out of the competition, it really is a matter of when and not if they are eliminated. Worse still, only the top seven teams of this tournament will join the host Pakistan in the Champions Trophy in 2025, so England may have to work to even make that. Fourth time in a row that England have been bowled out in this competition, and they are, quite frankly, getting worse. Against Afghanistan, they made 215. Against South Africa, they made 170. Against Sri Lanka, 156. And now against India, 129. And just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, the decisive blow could now arrive on Saturday at the hands of guess who? Yes, Australia in Ahmedabad. Richard, can it get any worse?
That's a hard question, because England traditionally, and I thought we turned a corner actually with this most recent side, but traditionally we talked about England hitting a new low in the sort of 80s and 90s and before the 2005 Ashes side. We thought, oh, England hit a new low, and then they found a way to dig even lower.
Yeah.
I think the issue with this one was, A, this side has strong remnants of the one that won 4 years ago, and of course has won the T20 World Cup, our reigning champions. Actually, in both short forms, still hold them as it stands at the moment. But also, it was entirely unexpected. I mean, barring a couple of issues, I don't think anyone had a massive disagreement around the squad that was chosen, and yet they have performed abysmally. And you just find as an English sports fan, our ability to find ways to lose is staggering. And if you look at it, I mean, given how important sport is in this country, and given our economic resources, only one World Cup in football, only one World Cup in cricket, only one World Cup in rugby. That's not good enough. I mean, we've been performing at the Olympics in the last few years, but traditionally, and I think that was based around building up to 2012, and there's a residue around that has been strong. We've been performing exceptionally well, and that's partly down to a very hard-headed approach over where the resources go. But if you think about these big sports, the footballs, the rugbies, the cricket, we should have more than one each, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think there's also, If you look back at the history of the World Cups, and in cricket, it's not been going that long. Was it 75 was the first one? Yeah. They got to the... We've made the final a few times. 79, 75, 79, 87 and 92. But generally, and you're right, we've only won it once. You strip out 2019 and that success, there's a catalogue of complete disaster away from that. You think back to the one before that, 2015.
I'm just looking at it now. And 90, so if starting in 96, we reached the quarterfinal, having been runners-up in 87 and 92. Quarterfinal in 96. Pool stage in both 99 and 2003. The Super 8, which is kind of that pool stage, in 2007. Quarterfinal in 2011. Pool stage again in 2015. So between being runners-up in 92 and winning it in 2019, so what is that, 26 years, we had two quarterfinals. Now, if you look at Australia, so they took time to get going. Runners-up in 75, group stage in 79 and 83. Okay, they win it for the first time in 87. Then their record is this, after winning it in 87. 92, go out at the round robin. Then, 96, runners-up. Then, champions, 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 quarter-finalists, champions, semi-finalists.
And quite often, and as with this time, they sort of go into the competition looking undercooked.
Yeah, you would have thought, well, they're not... Potentially, in terms of the resources they've got available on the pitch and the players they've got in form, is not that much different to England. You'd have thought they'd both make the semi-final and then India will go and win it. Yeah. That's what I kind of thought would happen, to be honest. And you can see, even though, yeah, what I can see happening is South Africa look great, India look great, India look very, very great. But South Africa will find a way to fail despite their fantastic form, and Australia will play India in the final, and then India will probably get it. But you know that Australia are going to be there or thereabouts. If you look at their management of their resources, their ability there, and it must go down to talent development, it must go down to management, it must go down to attitude, it must go down to culture, because it keeps on happening that Australia's record at cricket is much better than ours, and we've got a bigger population, we've got more resources.
Yeah. You know? Also, I mean, to be fair, on occasions, and I'm thinking mostly of about 2003, circumstances run against England, the whole situation with Zimbabwe, where they were caught between a rock and a hard place between the government and the ECB about whether to go and play Zimbabwe, who were in their group in that World Cup. And eventually they decided not to play. And it was a famous press conference where Nasser Hussain was captain, and I think he was in tears, wasn't he, because of the whole situation and the fact that by not playing meant they forfeited it, and Zimbabwe went through at the expense of England. So that was a reason for 2003. But as is happening this time, England don't do themselves any favours. The whole run-up to the cut to this tournament, you know, the picking of the squad, the picking of players, and then this whole, in the middle of it all, this contract news. And as we've seen, someone like David Willey just gets treated appallingly when he's actually having quite a decent World Cup, comparatively. And, you know, unsurprisingly now says, well, that'll do me, I'm going to retire from all this, I'm not done yet, I'm going to go and basically chance my arm around the franchise cricket world.
Yeah, and I think you look at the management of the ECB there, and you have to worry. I've got a lot more time for the Richards than I previously than I had for the previous regime, a whole load more time. However, I think they've got this wrong in not only the timing, but also if you look at the announcement of the squad, Jason Roy, Harry Brook, all those issues around there. I thought that was unnecessary. The announcement of the contracts in the middle of the World Cup.
What are they thinking?
It's just unnecessary. And now we're left with a whole load of players, and I think the cost is 15 million a year. I've read that it's 15 million a year. And a load of those players will be post 35 when their contract ends. That's not building for the future. I think that is trying to lock them down over the next couple of years in the short term to make sure they don't go and get IPL 12-month contracts or contracts with Indian franchises. I get that, but I do worry around what's happened to football in that so much of the money that's created in football by TV companies and fans ends up going to players and agents, and it hamstrings football clubs, and it means the game grows to a certain extent, but well, does it, who, for whose benefit does it grow?
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
I'm John Sharma, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Every Wednesday on Phoenix 98 FM at 7pm, it's the Orient Hour, bringing you the news, views and special guest interviews from the Brea Group Stadium, Brisbane Road. Join us every Wednesday at 7pm on Phoenix 98 FM for the Orient Hour.
Hi, it's Darren Mutu. Join me on Phoenix FM for Reggae Revival, the only place we all hear old school roots rock, reggae, dub plates, lovers rock. Make sure you don't miss it. Every Wednesday, 10 until midnight, only on Phoenix 98 FM.
It's Reggae Revival with Darren Mutu on Phoenix FM.
98. 98
FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Welcome back to 98. Now, make sure you tune in to all of those. In fact, don't ever touch your dial. Keep it locked to Phoenix FM. Lots and lots of great shows, all different types of music. And, of course, the wonderful John Charm on Saturday afternoon with the best Saturday afternoon sports show going. And don't forget that John follows us tonight at 7 o'clock with the non-league hour from 7 till 8. And then Gareth is here bumper to bumper, 8 until 9. Then Madeline takes over after that. I'm here with Richard Clark, a.k.a. the Grumbler, in the studio. We're just examining England and, OK, they're not having a great World Cup, brackets again. But why is the boot being put into county cricket? Why? I mean, there are obvious things about the 100 being prioritised this year and basically 50-over cricket being kicked into the long grass and basically... I don't care how it's dressed up by the ECB or the authorities, it was basically relegated to being a development competition played by second 11 players up and down the country and not really given any support or coverage, all the rest of it, which was a shame because there were some really, really good games and it was a chance to watch cricket at some of the outgrounds, which have seemed to have fallen out of favour. But is it really... Should county cricket be given the blame for all of this?
Is it being given the brain? I'm not sure it's quite as direct as that. I think people are very watchful of that critique because it's happened so often. For me, I think it's hard to take a direct route from we don't play enough 50 or the England team hasn't played enough 50-over cricket because I don't think they've played any less or markedly less than India or Australia, for example. Given the tournament that shall not be named and its effect, I think that's not a direct link, in my opinion. I don't think what happens to England consistently when they fail is not any one thing. I think it's an overall attitude, an overall culture, an overall way the game is organised. And what I fear more than failure, because again, if you're an England cricket fan, you're used to the odd calamity here and there, sporting calamity, I should say. Things happen, things go wrong. What I fear is the overreaction. Because if you look at the tournament that shall not be named, came from an overreaction to concern over the value of media rights. If you look at the Strauss report, that came from an overreaction from our debacle in the Ashes down under. What tends to happen, and this is a problem, this I think is the problem with English cricket, the same people run the game as has always run it, and we have a very not a very inclusive sport in terms of social class. Obviously there's gender and race across that, but in terms of social class it's not very inclusive. So when we talk about widening the game, I particularly want to widen it across social class and get more players playing, more players into the talent pathways, a greater talent pool from which to draw. I think that's crucially important, because the people who run the game seem very happy in the past, have been very happy for it to have that very exclusive element to it, which I think is really important.
Well, there are a lot of schemes going on at the moment, and the ECB likes that. Every test match you get kids that are paraded around the ground, but I don't see much product from all of it, and there's lots of really good ones. We're not going to name or highlight anyone in particular, but what we need to see is someone saying this is a product of X project or Y project or this foundation or that, and I don't see it. I see kids in t-shirts hitting balls around on the outfield, but where's the progression? That needs to happen.
Well, there's a piece written in the Mail this week, a guy called Ian Herbert talked about, you know, he didn't really care about England's or spare the tears over England's debacle on the pitch. What he's worried about is the loss of cricket in schools, and I think that's absolutely critical. Yeah. It's gone through clubs such as yours, but the loss of cricket in schools, critical.
Absolutely. What do you think? Let us know. Get in touch all the usual ways. Email radio at phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98, not out. I will get it out of my mouth one day. And use the social media channels to give us your views on the state of cricket, the state of England, and where do we go from here. Right, Richard and I are about to dash off to the county ground at Chelmsford. There's a members' supper up there tonight where we are going to be mixing with the great and the good. John Stevenson, the CEO, is there. And special guest is John Lever, who many of you will remember as being an Essex stalwart and had some great times in an England shirt as well. Keep it locked to Phoenix. Coming up after me is John Chubb with the Non-League Hour. And playing us out tonight is a proper 90s classic.
Phoenix 98 FM.
pull back the duvet, make my way to the refrigerator. One dry potato inside, no lie, not even bread jam. When the light above my head went bam, I can't see, something's all over me. Greasy insomnia, please release me and let me dream about making mad love on the heath, tearing off tights with my teeth. But there's no relief, I'm wide awake in my kitchen. It's black and I'm lonely. Oh, if I could only get some sleep. Creaky noises make my skin creep. I need to get some sleep. I can't get no sleep.